Legislative Administration to order. The clerk will note the roll, and a quorum is present. Next, then, Junkie will move the minutes from the Monday, August 17, 2009 meeting. Any discussion on the minutes? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Members, before we get to the major item on the agenda, I want to take note that we have two new members of the Rules Committee meeting as of last week, with the fairly recent election of Representative Sellers as Minority Leader, and his request to be put on the Rules Committee. Instead of subtracting a member off of the Republican side of the aisle, the Speaker chose to add Representative Sellers, and then to keep the ratio the same, add someone from the DFL side of the aisle, too. So I'd like to welcome Representative Sellers to the committee and Representative Morrow as well. So thanks for being with us. Members, now the major reason we're here today is to deal with House Resolution R-19 relating to the unallotment of funds. I have quite a bit of information in your packets that I can walk you through, just to familiarize yourself with the packet. So we have the resolution before you. You should have a memo from Mr. McCormick from House Research detailing House Research's participation in legal matters. You should have a copy of a letter that I sent to the Chief Judge of the Second Judicial Court pertaining to this meeting that we're having today.
Would it be premature to ask a question now?
Yes, I'm just walking through the packet to show you what we have, and then we'll okay. I'll move the resolution, get it before us, and then we can have discussion. We have a letter from Representative Sellers to myself that I wanted to make the members of the committee aware of. You also have a constitution before you and a copy of the statute area that deals with unallotment. So in order to get this discussion appropriately before the committee, I'm going to move House Resolution 9, or Committee on Rules Administration Resolution R-19A to be before us. Members, this resolution is fairly self-explanatory, but what this would do, it would ask and direct the House Research Department to develop an amicus brief in support of the plaintiffs in the case that is going to be going forward on the unallotments. Members, not being a lawyer myself, and I know many of this committee are not lawyers and the public as well, I believe it's appropriate for us to get our hands around what this resolution would do as far as an amicus brief is concerned. And so I would like Mr. McCormick to briefly explain, if this resolution were to pass, what would happen and what would House Research do in this instance in relation to the amicus brief. Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chair, members, the House Research Department would file, well, let me back up a minute. Currently, this morning, a temporary restraining order hearing is being conducted at the district court level. The House Research Department would not be a party to that case, nor would the House of Representatives. Instead, the House of Representatives would file an amicus brief in this matter. The amicus brief would, as per Resolution 2009-R19A, support the plaintiffs in this case, the case of Deanna Brayton et al. Versus Tim Plenty. If the Rules Committee goes forward and adopts the R19A, I will assign attorneys in our office to prepare the amicus brief, which should take a couple of days, and that would be reviewed, prepared, and then filed with the district court.
Any discussions for the process that would happen moving forward? President Seifert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a procedural question, which is this is a resolution that is going to another governmental body, which is the court. And I look at our rules, Mr. Chairman, or Rule 4.02 resolutions, which this is, a statement of facts being forwarded for action to a governmental official, agency, or body, or other similar proposal as a memorial, it must be introduced in the same form and take the same course as a bill. I look at your letter that is that we received this morning that says the Rules Committee is acting under authority of the House, and I'm a little confused about where the Rules Committee can speak for the whole House, and then perhaps that is in the rules somewhere that I'm not finding, but maybe it's for Council, is how the Rules Committee can do this and fit within the purview under the permanent rules.
Yes, Representative Seifert, so the first part, we would not be passing the resolution forward to the court. The brief would be prepared, and that would be delivered to the court. But Mr. McCormick can probably go into the details and history and I would refer members to the memo that's dated November 16th from Patrick McCormick to talk about the history of House Research participation in legal matters dating back to the 1970s through today. But Mr. McCormick, can you help answer Representative Seifert's question?
Mr. Chairman, members, there's always been a little bit of confusion by the use of the term resolution. The Rules Committee adopts a variety of resolutions that are essentially binding orders on the House of Representatives and its staff. Those resolutions are not the same as one of the resolutions, memorial, and other resolutions that are introduced on the House floor and debated. And perhaps over the years we should come up with a different set of terms. But you'll note that we, in resolution form, adopt a variety of administrative and other matters. And this is essentially one of those resolutions which orders the House Research Department to take an action. Secondly, in your packet you'll see two memos. One is from Joe Michaels, who is the lead counsel of the House of Representatives, and the other is from myself. In these memos, we outline the history of House Research and the history, to some extent, of the House of Representatives in legal matters. The House Research Department has as part of its mission statement to advise the House on legal matters arising from the conduct of House business. And as a matter of routine involvement, handles cases involving personnel matters, handles contract matters and contract construction for the House Representatives. We also handle, for a number of individual members, cases arising from the constitutional privilege on legislative speech. And so, for example, if a member of the House is subpoenaed on a matter relating to a bill, for example, that they might have authored or a position they may have taken, the House Research Department will move to quash those subpoenas on the grounds of the legislative immunity. And also there is a separate statutory privilege to be immune in testifying before a court during the legislative session, and we would represent members in those matters. House Research takes positions at the behest of the House of Representatives and represents the House of Representatives. We do not represent individual members or handle individual cases that do not rise to a matter that is important to the House of Representatives. And we would not have standing to represent individual members. The crucial question of standing is what is the role of the House of Representatives in this matter. Now, our history has taken House Research into the courts on a number of occasions. And you'll note in Joe Michaels' memo that he talks about prior filing of an amicus brief in the mid-1970s. There are also involvement in specific lawsuits, including the lawsuit between Governor Carlson over legislative vetoes, and in addition there was a separate lawsuit over House space within the Capitol, and House Research took part in each of those cases. It's typical for the House Research Department to take a preliminary role in filings and in some of the preliminary motions, We are not experienced litigators, and the House does have a separate outside law firm, which we use when a matter becomes a case of litigation. We take our direction in these matters from the Speaker and from the Rules Committee and from the House of Representatives as a whole. And in different cases at different times, we have taken direction from any one of these three different entities. In the case over the House office spaces in the Capitol, the Speaker, then Irv Anderson, specifically directed House Research to take a role in the court, and that was appropriate because the Speaker has specific authority over all House spaces in House Rule 7.01. And so we were taking a part of something that is appropriately constituted as part of the Speaker's duties. The House Rules Committee has authority over the legislative administration of the House. And in the interim, the Speaker and the House Rules Committee are charged with the administration and representation of the House in matters that are of corporate interest to the House. Therefore, House Research would follow either an appropriate direction from the Speaker or an appropriate resolution of the House Rules Committee to take an active role. It's important to note that no filing will ever represent House Research's or the House Research's Department's opinion or the House Research Department's position on any matter. In legal matters, we are serving as an attorney for a client. And the key and crucial question is the legal standing of our client. And so, for example, if House Research were to file an amicus brief, it would not be a House Research amicus brief. It would be an amicus brief as directed by the Rules Committee of the Minnesota House of Representatives. And we would take the position that would be ordered in the resolution by the Minnesota House of Representatives through its appropriately constituted Rules Committee. Therefore, your debate today is about how to direct your employees, in this case, the lawyers who work for you within the House Research Department.
Representative Cypress?
Well, Mr. Chairman, what disturbs me is we're essentially going to have nonpartisan House Research brought into a political matter. And we have a motion before us to approve the resolution, Mr. Chair. I'd ask for a roll call first. I think this is a political matter, and I think what we're doing is we're bringing nonpartisan House Research into a political matter, and it sets a very bad precedent. Now, you know, I looked at the memo very carefully that Mr. Michael did. He said this one case from the 1970s, he couldn't even find out. I'm not sure how the House's amicus filing was authorized. I could find no authorizing resolutions in the House and Senate journals in the 1970s. So I think we are setting a precedent today where if the shoe's on the other foot and we start using House Research to start doing this at the behest of interest groups or people who don't like what's going on in government, I think that should give us all pause. And are we going to start having a situation where someone challenges right to carry, well, we want the House representative to do this, depending on who controls the body, who controls the Rules Committee. And so we're going to have a situation where on the flavor of the day, whatever issue is brought up and litigated, we're going to end up dragging nonpartisan House Research in to serve partisan purposes. So that's the disturbing part of this that I think should give us all pause before authorizing anything like this.
S.M. Winkler and then Westrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Seifert's comments, I don't think that we should consider this a political or a partisan matter. We're not talking about a policy debate on an issue. We're not talking about a tax bill. We're not talking about what the budget should look like. We're talking about the authority of the Minnesota House of Representatives and the legislature in general to make law, to make appropriations, and for the governor to execute those laws. We're talking about an interpretation of a statute that was passed into law for a very specific purpose, and we're talking about the authority of the governor to interpret that law and use it for a different purpose. We are talking about whether or not the institutions that are set up in the Constitution are following their correct course, whether they are sticking to the separation of powers contained in Article 3 of the Constitution. I think this is exactly what we would want House research to represent us for, because we are talking about matters that are of grave concern and importance to the House of Representatives as an institution.
President Westrup.
Mr. Chairman, I guess a question to Mr. McCormick, but maybe to you, Mr. Chair. So we authorize, if we were to pass this resolution, we're directing nonpartisan staff to take part in this political question or challenge that's going on in the courts. What's the next step of approving this brief? Or who gets to direct what goes into the brief or not? Are they legal counsel for all 134 legislative members, and therefore the clients are 134 strong, and we all get to review this brief to approve what is going out? Or who will make that decision of what goes in that brief?
Representative Western, before I have Mr. McCormick answer your question, I'm going to correct your assumption at the beginning. Once again, this deals with our Article 3 of our state constitution, separation of powers. It deals with a statute that you have before you about unallotment and when unallotment is appropriate. There is nothing political about that. When we go to the third branch of government, the judicial branch, they do not rule on political issues. They rule on the substance of law in both the constitution and Minnesota state statutes. That's what we have before us today, is something very serious looking at law. We try to keep politics out of the judicial branch, and today that's what we're trying to do in the Rules Committee. Mr. McCormick, to the substance of Representative Westrum's question.
Can I just, Mr. Chair?
Representative Westrum.
Maybe I haven't. I think I've gone through everything I was sent. What is the statute? Because I don't have that statute in front of me, nor that Article 3 of the Constitution. If you could let me know the statute, I can probably look it up offhand.
Sure. The statute, Representative Westrum, is 16A.152. I would particularly refer you to subsection 4, dealing with reductions. And Article 3 of the Constitution, I can actually read to the members because it is very brief. Distribution of the powers of government. Section 1, division of powers. The powers of government shall be divided into three distinct departments, legislative, executive, and judicial. No person or persons belonging to or constituting one of these departments shall exercise any of the powers properly belonging to either of the other, except in the instances expressly provided in this Constitution. Now, Mr. McCormick, do you remember Representative Westrum's question, and can you speak to that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrum, the question was, what would be the next technical steps we would take, and who would review the specific draft of an amicus brief? And I would probably suggest that the next step would be that Mr. Michael and Mr. Shepherd and perhaps some other attorneys in our office would complete a draft of an amicus brief. They've already researched unallotment as part of a variety of publications we normally do on a lot of matters, and they've also probably looked at other states' court cases regarding that allotment. And I think the next step would be to review the current court filings and then to create a draft along the lines some suggested here today. At that point, either that draft would be reviewed by members of the Rules Committee, or a subset of members is directed by the chair, or it could be directly filed by the House Research Department without review by members, and I think we would seek guidance from the chair and from the committee members as to the best way to go forward.
Representative Westrum.
Well, so Mr. Chair, I guess that'd be an answer I'd like to have developed through the debate. It seems It seems that'd be critical in who gets to decide what's in a brief or not. That's very strategic positioning by whoever is doing that filing. And so I hope that becomes more clear as we have this discussion. Mr. Chair, could you just refresh or restate the statute? I got the first part, but I didn't get the last part, sure, of the unallotment statute.
Reston Westrum, it's 16A.152, and I would direct you to Subdivision 4, starting with reduction.
Thank you.
Representative Howes, and then Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And in reference to something you said and Representative Winkler said, that this is not a political maneuver or partisan maneuver. But as you well know, we read the newspaper, and you and I both agree that what's said in the statement is pretty much gospel. But it seems to me the headline on Friday or Saturday was, the DFL is going to join with an amicus brief in a lawsuit against the Pawlenty administration. So obviously out there in the public's world, where they do real work and contribute to society in a real way, they believe it's a DFL lawsuit. So I would appreciate that if and when, well, you will succeed with your resolution, but you make it very clear to the press so they can say to the people that it is a House resolution, but voted on by the DFL-controlled legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And with all due respect, and I mean that seriously, you can do what you want. You're in the leadership, and you have to do what you think is the right thing to do under your guidance. If it was the Republicans in charge and you were Representative Zeller, I'd be all over you, because I think it's wrong from just a political and a person's standpoint that we involve nonpartisan staff. I mean, I really think that you, with Mr. McCormick, seems like a pretty smart fella, and you have good staff. Even Mr. Dicklich could probably put some of the language together. I've seen him write. But you could do this with your own staff. You could do this with your own staff, and I'm a little disappointed with that. But I have a couple of questions. And
Representative House, before you get to your questions, two quick things. Number one, we cannot believe everything we read in the newspaper.
Oh, shit.
That may come as a surprise to you today. I think that's, in all sincerity, I think that's why it's important we have this meeting, so that we fully understand. You and I both are not lawyers, so filing this brief does not mean we are joining the lawsuit or any of that. We are merely not a party to the lawsuit. So I think it's important that the public out there, outside these walls, through our friends in the media, fully understand what is happening today. Second to that, our nonpartisan House research, as we look through the memo, this is part of their mission, and they're not my staff or whose staff. They are our staff, and they are directed by us to carry out these, just as they're directed out to carry out drafting of bills and amendments for members on all sides of the aisle. This is just a part of that mission that extends to
well,
Representative House.
Mr. Chairman, I'm a bricklayer, cement finisher by trade. I think I'm pretty good. You're in theater. Damn, you're good. The questions I have, the
yep.
First one is if what is, can you just briefly tell us what the case is by these plaintiffs? Is it specific to an area of an allotment, or is it the whole unallotment picture? In other words, let's say they prevail. Are they looking at a specific area, or is it the whole package and the whole unallotment law, or that the administration did the unallotment law incorrectly?
Mr. McCormick?
Mr. Chair, members, there are two aspects of the current case, and without getting too deeply into the details of the case, the legal aid is bringing its case on two separate elements of unallotment, a food assistance program and a renter's credit. And they are arguing both the technical issues related to those specific unallotments, and then I think their briefs also will include a general argument against the timing and nature of the unallotment. So what I would expect is that the court will be told that how these specific unallotments were done acted to rewrite statutes so that the governor exceeded the general authority of unallotment to reduce funding by making cuts that required statutory changes. And secondly, I believe that the court cases will argue that the timing, the nature of the allotment immediately after session was done in such a way that the governor did not have new information about an impending shortfall, and so it didn't follow the general guidelines of the allotment statutes. Now, I'm not an attorney, so I don't want to get too much deeper into this, but the governor will argue, if likely anyway, will argue the opposite side of the case, that his allotment actions were done as per statute and as per the law, and that the general allotment authority has been found constitutional in other areas at the appeals court level. That is my 10-cent outline of what this case is about.
That's somehow.
That was more than 10 cents, but it was good. Well, Representative Search, again, I just don't like the way we're doing this. Yeah, and again, you have the right and the power to do this. It seems it would be better if the House of Representatives truly did not like the unallotment process or procedure. Number one, we'd do a bill. Obviously, we can't do that till February, get it out of here for 4 or 6 weeks. So that's a delay there, but wouldn't it make more sense, not that I would vote with you on it, but wouldn't it make more sense that the House filed suit, or does not the House have standing? I know Mr. McCormick mentioned that word standing a little while ago. Rather than joining a specific group that's in a narrow focus. And then my next question and final question would be, I know politics is really getting partisan in the last 4 to 6 years. I mean, it's really no excuse for it. But I know in Washington we have the Pelosi jail time, you know, if you don't buy health care. Is there a certain jail time if a nonpartisan staff person declines because they think it's partisan?
There's a lot of questions in there. I'll stick to the last one and have Mr. McCormick respond to the last part of that question, and then I'll come back to the others. Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chair, I think the word awkward was coined to describe the position of House Research when we get caught between different sets of members on issues like this. If any particular member of my staff has an objection to working on any particular issue, I talk to them about that and on occasion would remove them from that issue, because I think that you have to, a member of the staff who has either a direct conflict or a disquieting feeling may not give adequate service. That said, House Research is professional and will do our best to respond to any appropriate order by an appropriate body of the House. And the Rules Committee has the right to order House Research to handle legal matters like this.
And President Powell, I guess in bricklayer, the small business guy terms, I see this as no different than somebody in our nonpartisan House Research drafting an amendment to do one thing for a Democrat, for example, and drafting an amendment that does the exact opposite for a Republican. Representative House, but you kind of slid through also in your questioning us joining the case and all of those issues. I'm wondering if Mr. McCormick could clearly define what the filing of a friend of the court brief would mean, and exactly what that means to this case, because I've read in the paper as well, Representative House, that we would be joining the lawsuit, we would be suing ourselves by filing this brief, and I'm wondering if Mr. McCormick could walk us through what it means to the non-lawyers sitting around the table.
Mr. Chair, I'm a non-lawyer as well, but I can tell you exactly what we would be doing in this case. If you're a party to the case, then you're responsible for bringing the legal argument and responding to all the motions in the case, and we are not a party to this case. We are not bringing the case. We are not part of the day-to-day activity of the case. We will be filing an amicus brief. An amicus brief advises the court on the opinion of the House of Representatives as to the legal issues in the brief, how those legal issues stand, and what the House of Representatives' opinion is on both the import of the case and on the legal arguments that have been presented to the court. Amicus briefs are typically filed at the appeals level, but of late, it is increasingly common for amicus briefs to be filed at the initial review of a legal case. The judge has absolute leeway to accept or reject an amicus brief at any point in the initial case filing, and secondly, to either weigh the arguments in the amicus brief strongly or to discount them. It's typical that a person or organization filing an amicus brief would not essentially weigh in on every aspect of handling of the case, but would weigh in on the larger issues of the case.
And President, I'll just answer one of your other questions that was embedded in that long litany, as far as what the other options would be. Certainly another option from the House of Representatives, other members of the general public, or members of the legislature would to be to file their own lawsuits. And certainly changing of the statute, further definition of on allotment, is something we could look at starting in February, and I know there is interest by members in looking at that for the future. But that would be prospective, and this court action is real time here. Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your indulgence. And just for the record, the questions I've asked you today are sincere, and there is a representative of the people in my district, and I'm not speaking for either caucus.
Thank you. Representative Simon, then Seifert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to weigh in, I guess, on what Mr. McCormick already said. I think this is a reasonable and limited way for the House of Representatives to make its voice heard. And as Mr. McCormick just said, we're not seeking to intervene here as a party. So we get the benefits of having our voice heard on an important issue that bears on separation of powers, but we don't bear the burdens of litigation. We're not subject to subpoena. No one's going to be rifling through internal documents here. No one's going to be calling anyone as a member of the House to testify in anything. So it seems to me a very reasonable and limited way for us to have our voice heard. And there's genuine disagreement here on whether that voice should be heard or whether we should be weighing in, and I respect Representative Howes and Seifert and others who have brought up those issues, and reasonable people can disagree. But I think it's important to just emphasize that we're not becoming a plaintiff in this lawsuit. This is just us weighing in along the lines that Mr. McCormick already articulated. So we get the benefits we want without the burdens that we don't want. Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, I'm just going to break it down very simply on what the resolution is. It says that the House of Representatives file amicus brief in support of the plaintiffs in the case of Deanna Brayton et al. Versus Tim Pawlenty regarding the governor's unallotment of funds subsequent to the 2009 session. Has every member of the committee read the case of Deanna Brayton versus Tim Pawlenty? Because I have to say, I looked through my packet of materials and I don't see the case in here. Are we just voting, assuming that we all know what this case is and what her arguments are? I could ask each member to yield. Have you read the case?
Mm-hmm.
And could you give us an explanation, a Cliff Notes explanation of it? We could start with Representative Hayden and go around the room. But I highly doubt that every member of this committee has read this case.
Representative Westrom.
There wasn't a rhetorical question, Mr. Chairman, and I am curious if there are members in the, if every member of this committee has read it. And I'll be honest, I have not.
Well, then, Representative Seifert, your answer is no, then. If you haven't read it, then every member has not read the case.
Mr. Chair, so just to be very specific, it's not in my packet, but it's also not in the members' packet. The other members don't have it as well, right?
No, I can get you it if you would like, Representative Seifert.
I think it'd be helpful, Mr. Chair, if we actually read the document that we are supposed to be supporting. I know they don't do that in Congress, but apparently the legislature now is moving in. But I think we should be able to read what it is we're supporting. Because right now all we have is a two-sentence resolution saying we are going to direct nonpartisan staff to take a side in a case that maybe, and I think I'm stretching it, three people in this room have actually sat down and read in total. And if people want to give us a show of hands and tell us that they've read the case, I certainly would ask members to raise their hands if they've actually read this case, and then we'll know who's making an informed decision as we vote. But I was a little surprised as I rifled through my packet that the case actually that we're asked to vote to support is not even in our packet. And I do think for an informed citizenry, the representative should read the cases, the bills, the amendments, the resolutions that they're voting on.
Representative Winkler, to that point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Seifert, I think just to clarify, there isn't a case, per se, for anybody to read. There's a complaint filed by the plaintiff. There is a motion for a temporary restraining order with the accompanying memorandum of law in support of their motion. And there is a memorandum of law from the governor as well as three commissioners in opposition to the temporary restraining order. All of those documents together make up a file, but they don't make up a case that we can read per se. And I think Mr. McCormick described this pretty well. We are going to be weighing in to the extent that we do on issues related to the Constitution and legislative authority. We are not weighing in on all matters in the case. An amicus brief has the form of weighing in on a particular issue that's of particular importance to the individual or entity that is trying to file the amicus brief. But we're only talking about issues that directly relate to legislative authority. And that's the nature of an amicus brief.
And Representative Seifert, to that point, the statute that pertains to unallotments and the article in the Constitution that deals with separation of powers is in your packets, and the statute that deals with unallotment is 4 pages long, so hopefully you have an opportunity to page through that as the discussion moves forward.
Mr. Chair, to that point, on line 6 it says, in support of the plaintiffs in the case of Deanna Brayton. Now, maybe it should say in the matter, and we could get a thesaurus out. But the reality is that this is a court matter that has court documents that supports the case or matter or file or whatever you want to call it of Deanna Brayton versus Tim Pawlenty. And my suspicion is that a majority of this committee has not read the case, the matter, the file, the paperwork, whatever you want to call it, Representative Winkler. I think I know that most members here, apparently I don't have the information, but we do not have the paper. We are asking for our nonpartisan House researchers to support this case, this matter, this file, this briefing, whatever you want to call it, of Deanna Brayton, but people in the room have not read the case, the matter, the theory, whatever you want to call it. And I think we should read this before we order our nonpartisan staffers to take sides in it on the behalf of our constituents at taxpayer expense. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, Representative Morrow, to that point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, while the filings may not be in our packet, Mr. Chair, they are online. And I did see this matter coming up on this agenda, this being my first meeting on this committee. So I did go online, and I did read the filings. And I also agree with Representative Winkler's point about the separation of powers. An amicus brief is on a limited or narrow point, on the separation of powers point. And that is the point to which I attended my focus this weekend as I reread the materials to prepare for today.
And Mr. Chair, to that point.
Mr.
Chair, I would point out to the committee members that in the bottom right-hand side, the resolution is dated 11-16 this morning at 6:48 a.m.
Okay. Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to have further questions, but I'm waiting for some of my questions to get answered that I previously had. But, Mr. Chair, could you tell me who solicited you to bring forth this resolution?
Representative Westrom, I decided on my own to call this meeting.
So,
Representative Westrom.
Representative Surge, Mr. Chair, so you haven't had discussions with legal aid attorneys who have had an interest in us trying to join in as a friend of the court for their position?
Representative Westrom, no, I have not.
So,
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, it seems like this process, and maybe you can give me this answer, if there's another case out there, members of the legislature, are we able to just now go to House research staff and have them file an amicus brief for us or for a group of us if we see that would be a case we'd like to have an interest in? Is that where we're going with this?
Representative Westrum, I believe Mr. McCormick walked you through the process of the three ways that have been set in place by our rules and by precedent in how to be a party to a lawsuit or to file a brief of this kind.
So,
Representative Westrum.
Mr. Chair, that wasn't an answer to my question. I'm wondering if there's another case out there. Can I go have House research staff work on an amicus brief for me to file, or there might be 50 of us members that want that? Is that something that you'd be open to having happen? It's a simple yes or no question.
President Westrum, I believe a better way of doing this, if you're going to represent the legislature, the body, as is stated in the document that Mr. McCormick read to us, I believe it is better to have a public hearing, have people in a bipartisan way sit down and discuss the issue, and move forward if we're not in session. If we're in session, I believe the most appropriate way of doing it is by House resolution. That's my question.
So, Mr. Chair, a couple other questions. And so, by that, basically, you're going to have to be in the majority party to get that passed through committee, as we would all know. Anybody watching knows that's what happens. If I can explain your answer better, that's basically what you just said, Mr. Chair.
Representative Westrum, that is not what I said. Representative Westrum.
Mr. Chair, the court, the plaintiff's pleadings, excuse me, the plaintiff's pleadings I've got don't have a date the court case was filed. Do you know what date that was that this case was filed? Or does anybody?
Representative Westrum, that would be October 29, 2009. Representative Westrum.
So, Mr. Chair, the case was filed October 29th. November 12th, late afternoon, we get notice that we're going to have a meeting 2 weeks after the case is filed, and now we've got a Friday to rearrange our schedules for Monday, a weekend, and Monday morning we get the documents to decide whether we're going to join in this case that few of us have read entirely. Some have read partly. I'm just baffled that this is going to be the process with one business day notice to have this kind of a meeting when the case was filed 2 weeks ago, over 2 weeks prior.
Representative Westrum, just to correct, once again, we are not voting to join the case. Everybody on this committee was alerted last Thursday of the meeting. The reasoning for having the meeting today is because the court will hear a motion on a temporary restraining order later today, and we wanted to make sure that if we decided to move forward with a friend of the court brief, that we have that included in discussion this week.
Mr. Chair, I need to correct what you just said. You are joining one side or the other when you file an amicus brief, at least in support of their position. It does get back to my question, however. I mean, I suppose it's conceivable that our House research join as a friend of the plaintiffs, but be right in support of the defense. I don't think that's going to be the case, given the way this resolution is structured. But I suppose that's one way we could join and not support the plaintiffs. It gets to my earlier question of how are we going to go through the review process and vetting of what gets to be put in this brief or not, and I'll wait for the answers as we have more discussion.
That's important to that point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been on the list for a while to respond since the last time Representative Westrum raised that point. I don't think that this committee or a subset of this committee should be micromanaging the drafting of a brief. I think we have able counsel. The issues are of constitutional law. They are not fact issues. It's about the interpretation of the unallotment statute in the Constitution, the powers reserved for the legislature, and the powers reserved for the governor, very clearly stated in our Constitution. And I don't think that it makes a lot of sense to have people on the committee micromanaging the words that are chosen for two reasons. One, we govern by majority vote. That's also in our Constitution. And so once the House of Representatives has taken an action by majority vote, that's the action that goes forward, regardless of how a minority group of members feels about it. The second reason is timeliness. This temporary restraining order is being considered this week. I would imagine the judge would be expediting her consideration of it, since a request for a temporary restraining order is a request for extraordinary and immediate relief. And so in order to have our attorneys that represent the House of Representatives put the best brief together possible, I think we should respect their legal judgment of what belongs in the brief and what doesn't belong in the brief. Secondly, to the issue that Representative Seifert and Westrum and Howes have raised about the issue of joining, the House of Representatives is not today debating whether to join a suit. We are debating whether to file an amicus brief. And I think many of us individually, singly, have looked at the issue of whether we should, as the House of Representatives, file a suit. And determining that we're not going to file a suit ourselves is not a determination that we don't have a strong case that we would win, but it's a determination that the most cost-effective and sensible thing in some instances, even where you would win a lawsuit, is to not file a case. And I think we're going into another session. Many of the issues that divided the governor and the legislature in the last session are still present. In the interest of trying to have a productive conversation about how to resolve those issues, it doesn't, I don't believe, make sense for the House of Representatives to initiate or to join a lawsuit. However, I think as a member of the House of Representatives, I would be failing in my duty as a part of our democratic institution to not articulate our position in a suit that has been filed on the issue of separation of powers.
Representative Detmer. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Seifert addressed my question very clearly about how many of us have read the brief. And my question maybe is, who has directed the House Research to prepare this amicus brief? Is this coming from this body or from majority party?
Senator Detmer, it would be the Rules Committee, right, with this resolution would be directing them. That is what we'll be voting upon at the end of this discussion.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Gunther, and then Zellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been here, some people think, too long.
Not me, Representative Gunther.
I appreciate that. I remember when Chairman Trimble was going to hire a committee administrator. He said, Representative Gunther, I'd like to have you come here and help me decide which one to pick. And that's when the Republicans were gaining strength and the two parties were close. To be real honest with you, I didn't think I'd ever be in the majority. But I spent equal time in both. And I remember those people asking me, how sure is this job in the future? And because it was a partisan position, we had to be honest and say, as long as we are in the majority, you'll have a job. I never considered nonpartisan staff anything other than nonpartisan staff. And to me, with things like this, we're putting a big cloud over the whole nonpartisan partisan staff deal for a lot of folks. And I remember most of those people that we interviewed did not want to take the job. I'm very proud to say that I honestly don't know who on the nonpartisan staff are Republicans or Democrats, and I don't promise you I'll never ask them. I have a lot of confidence in their ability to take care of both sides. I look at why, with all the skilled attorneys the DFL has to call on to help with this amicus brief, why are we asking and putting this cloud around the nonpartisan staff when we don't have to? Whether we've done it in the past or not, why are we continuing the cloud and put the stigma on the nonpartisan staff? Can you ask me that?
Representative Gunther, I don't understand where you're coming from on this because of this one key point. We're not asking staff to do anything partisan. We're asking for an opinion about the law as it pertains to 16A.152 in our statutes. We're asking for their aid in an opinion on separation of powers of Article 3 of the Constitution. There is nothing partisan about that. President Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, last I heard, Governor Plenty is a Republican. And last I heard, there are the minority on this committee and in the legislature are Republicans. This, you're trying to tell me that this is not political? I beg to differ with you. It's absolutely partisan. It's absolutely political. And to try to kid yourself that it isn't, when you have available to you some very talented lawyers that represent DFL ideas and ideas, look at all the lawyers that contribute to your caucus. Call one of them up and say, hey, can you get some of your friends to come here and help draft this so we don't have to ask nonpartisan staff to do it? I think it's very easy for you to do that. And knowing how talented you are, I'm sure we'll get Clarence Darrell to do it for you.
President Gunther, I don't think there is anything political about standing up for our state constitution on separation of powers. I don't think there is anything political about standing up to follow the letter of the law in unallotment. There is absolutely nothing political about that. This is not about right versus left, members. It's about right versus wrong. Representative Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, a few different questions, but to that question right away, have you read the pleadings for the case?
Representative Westrom, yes, I have. Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, assuming you have, as you answered, then you can make that statement. I don't think the rest of the committee members could make that statement if they haven't read it all, and I have not read it all. In fact, it was hard to find some of it, briefly, and with the short period of time we had. But, Mr. Chair, I think Representative Hartman kind of hit the nail on the head about this whole issue being a political issue. Representative Hartman, I'm amazed what you're suggesting that I agree we've got talented House research staff. That's apparently why the Democrats want to use them for free to file this amicus brief. To answer Representative Gunther's question, that's exactly why they want to do it. But Representative Hartman, for you to suggest that we don't want to review the draft, it would be the same as having them draft a bill for us and us not review a bill we're going to introduce and just file it to the court without us getting to review it. Who's writing the brief then is the question. And it sounds from your answer that no, we're just going to carte blanche send this over there. The people that get to direct them and review it and decide what's in it will be them. And I assume probably guidance from the chair who said he thought this idea up on his own. Pretty amazing that that's what we want to do. I think Representative Gunther had a very valid point. $1,000 might get the Democrats the ability to hire you might even get a pro bono attorney out there to do this. Why would we want to cloud the nonpartisan staff? I've been here probably longer than most people at this table, and not as long as Representative Gunther. But I remember my first orientation and how everybody heralded about the House research being very good at balancing both sides of the aisle, Democrats, Republicans. They might write an amendment, identical amendments for Democrat and a Republican. They might write opposing amendments for Democrat and Democrats. They might write opposing amendments for Democrats and Republicans. Why do we want to go down the road of now directing them to do partisan work? And Representative Sertich and Representative Hortman talked about we've done this before. I've looked through the reviews. The only time the House is, appears to me that they've gotten involved is when the House is directly affected with space in the Capitol or issues that directly apply to the House. There's all kinds of cases filed out there. Concealed carry. We didn't get involved in the concealed carry case, even though that was a legislative legislative challenge in the courts. We didn't get involved in the life estate repeal of 2003, even though that was a statutory change in the law that somebody was challenging. So to call this not political, it's merely a political question. Representative Hortman, it's a simple fix. It's a legislative question that should be solved during the legislative session. It could have been solved last spring during the legislative process with the right people passing a law and managing it through. And so you're saying we should now leave it up to the courts instead, and I don't think that's proper. And so, Mr. Chair, I would just think our committee wants to think long and hard about this, and Representative Hauser is right. If Representative Zellers was the chair of this committee or the Speaker of the House, he'd be doing the wrong thing too. And so for $1,000 or $2,000 to get somebody outside to do this, I don't know why we're going to cloud and put our nonpartisan staff into this position.
Representative Winkler to this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only, I think, thing to keep in mind is that in 1991, when Governor Carlson illegally tried to veto several bills, the House of Representatives actually filed suit against the governor. That would be a much more, a bigger statement. It's a much more involved and stronger position for the House to take. In 1995, when the House Research represented the Minnesota House of Representatives, you're correct, they filed suit over office space in the state capitol. We're talking here about a question of whether or not the governor of Minnesota overstepped his authority and intruded on the legislative authority of the Minnesota House of Representatives and the legislature as a whole. I can't think of an issue that is more directly involved with the House as a whole, and I certainly think that an amicus brief that deals with the House's authority under the Constitution is a relatively measured and reasoned response in comparison to House Research suing the governor over office space at the Capitol.
Representative Zellers, and then Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, just one question, and relates to the letter that you referenced. If this is the House's position, why did the letter or the resolution not come from the Speaker's office?
I'm sorry. I don't understand the question.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, a lot of the news reports said that the Speaker had been talking with these groups. The Speaker had been having conversations with a number of these folks about lawsuits and groups that may or may not be looking at suits. So I'm just curious as to why the amicus brief or the idea for this brief is coming from you and not from the Speaker herself.
President Zellers and members of the committee, I think a better way of handling the issue in this instance is to have a full committee vet this issue. Certainly in the past, as we have learned, speakers have directed House Research to join in lawsuits, by resolution of the entire body. I feel it's most appropriate that we have a full and open public discussion on this issue in this instance than just one legislator deciding. That's my judge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that was my point in the letter, is that the Speaker has had these conversations with some of these groups or individuals or the people in the lawsuit. They're named in the supporting court documents to get into the legal wranglings or the pretty talk. And she knows what the part of the conversation, whether something was promised or not promised, House Research being made available, not available, the fine legal skills of Representative Simon, Winkler, whomever, and for this body, to Representative Seifert's point, for this group to take a vote without knowing all those things, if you know you've got the free and willing support of one of the most respected legal minds or groups of legal minds in the House Research Department at your disposal, you're probably more than willing to go into court then, at least from my standpoint. I'm not one of the lawyers in the committee, but I think that maybe then makes you maybe a little more emboldened, but I don't know. Maybe the groups suing are not counting on this, or they were. That was my point in asking for the Speaker to be here, because as you stated for the record, you'd not talk to any of these folks or I'm not sure who represented Western Mass, maybe it was Legal Aid or whomever, any of the parties in this group. So to have that knowledge not be a part of this discussion as we're going forward, I thought was appropriate to have the speaker here so that we as a body or we as a committee knew, because this group of people here is going to be, as you stated, taking a vote on behalf of the entire House representative. So I thought it was appropriate. The speaker did not, so I'll, I guess, your beach, you can make the rules. Mr. Chairman...
Well, that's until if you're going somewhere else, I'd like to comment on that piece of...
No, I was going to ask Mr. McCormick a question, so...
President Zellers, I think the question before us is not about conversations of other members. I think the question before us is, do we believe that the governor overstepped his authority as it relates to Article 3 of the Constitution and Minnesota Statute 16A? I believe that is the issue before us. And that is something that we can be well versed in by reading one paragraph in the Constitution and four pages of statutes. As to your point about, and I'm not quite sure I understand it, promising or any discussions, I would like to have Mr. McCormick perhaps comment on that portion of your question or musings. Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chair, members, House Research has not been a party to or taken part in any of the discussions that have been reported in the newspaper or any other discussions with the Speaker or other groups who are interested. And to my knowledge, nobody has promised House Research would play any role in any of those. If I was approached and told House Research was being promised, I would say no, it's not appropriate. The Speaker, within the specific authority of the Speaker under the rules, can order House Research to go forward, for example, in the case of the offices. And in that case, would typically have to file an affidavit signed by the Speaker under the Speaker's authority. And a broader issue of the House, it would be appropriate for the Rules Committee in the interim to take a vote and state a position of the House. That can either be buttressed, superseded, or in another way commented upon by a House resolution during the legislative session, in which would be appropriate to. So I, you know, personally, I would say no, and I would advise any of the staff who work for me to say no if invited to one of those meetings. Typically, House Research, if we're in an uncomfortable meeting, which we are daily, but if,
you work at the
clearly one at 8 o'clock this morning. typically, we would attempt to, you know, step out of the room if the discussion goes to political advantage. And we don't always step out of the room, but we typically try to. And so, to my knowledge, in this case, our involvement in this case is going to be ordered by the Rules Committee today, with whatever you folks decide.
President Zellers, you had another question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, to your point, the reason we are here is because of the resolution. Whether or not why the committee thinks we're here, and just to be clear, because I haven't read the legal documents relating to the Brayton versus Tim Pawlenty case, I'm just going to guess she's against him doing the unallotment. So what we're in support of here, and I think it's funny, I asked a couple of lawyers about amicus briefs, a couple of friends of mine, what they are, and because I had been reading again some of the press clippings on this, and we're defending the separation of powers, and we're going to stick to the three branches, and a friend of mine somewhat snickered. He said, well, amicus brief is telling the courts what you think they should do. Now, it's supposedly a friendly brief, but you're in no way reaffirming the division of powers. You're telling one of the divisions, here's what we think you should do while you're doing your job. So it's kind of like when I asked my son, what do you want for supper? And he says, pudding, yogurt, and candy bars. Well, that's an amicus brief to what we're going to cook for supper, but it's not exactly what we're going to do. So the reason we're here today isn't for what the process of unallotment and whether we all agree or disagree with it. It's because we're supporting the amicus brief in this Deanna Brayton case, and she's opposed to the governor's unallotment. So that's the reason we're here today. And the question I had for Mr. McCormick was, Once we're done here and the majority will pass this out, if one of the members of the committee, say Representative Westrum or Representative Gunther, comes to you, Mr. McCormick, and says, this is the way I believe you should write the amicus brief, and if Representative Sertich, Winkler, and Simon say, this is the way I think you should write the brief, how will you write the brief? I apologize, Mr. McCormick, for putting you in this position, because I don't think you should have been put in this position in the first place. So I apologize in advance, but unfortunately, this is what we've come down to. And cut away the legal talk and the pretty language. If the minority members ask you to write it one way, the majority members ask you to write it the other way, which way will the brief be written?
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chair, members, if the resolution is passed today, the House Research Department will construct a brief that supports the plaintiffs. Secondly, the brief will touch on issues related to the separation of powers, and it will outline those issues that a plaintiff's case would naturally accept as reasonable advice. If you are going to make a case in support of the plaintiffs, it has to be something that helps the plaintiffs. The issues regarding the separation of powers would be drafted by our attorneys, and they would use their own best knowledge of what that side of this case would argue. They would take input from any member, but they'll make their own professional judgment as to what a plaintiff's amicus brief would entail. And at a certain point, when they decide that that is the best that they would put forth on this side of the case, they'll go forward and file. Barring another procedure put forward by this committee for some sort of review, that's how they'll go forward. So they would, I guess, discount those arguments which are not helpful to filing a case for the plaintiffs. Listen to them and discount them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and that's the point. And in talking with Representative Howes about this as well, this is the part. One of the briefs you have written here, for those of you who aren't tax committee, is written by Joel Michael. And Joel is, Mr. Michael, is one of, if not the most respected member of, as far as my personal opinion, the legislature when it comes to nonpartisan legal staff. He's also one of the more respected members when it comes to these issues across the country when it deals with other state legislatures. To put them in a position, and you just heard from Mr. McCormick, this isn't a nonpartisan issue. This isn't a, well, we'll come down here, take a vote, they'll put together a brief and we'll submit it to the court. You've heard what's going to happen. The final determination has already been determined. There's no presupposing here. We're going to come down on the side of the plaintiff. We're going to ask these folks in nonpartisan research to take the opinion of the majority. And as we've talked about here before today, careful what you wish for. Because if it goes the other way, then this is the precedent you're setting. Again, I'm not the lawyer, but if you do it once or twice, or if you do it for your personal benefit or for your party's benefit today, it could be used against you tomorrow. So the nonpartisan, or we're going to toss it to the nonpartisan research department and see what they come up with, is not true. We're taking the side of the plaintiff. That's the brief that's going to come out. Representative Westrum could spend a fair amount of time with Mr. McCormick, with whomever the legal department is legal members of the legal department that are be working on this. The determination is going to be the same. We're going to be coming down on the side of Ms. Brighton and against Governor Pawlenty. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I urge a no vote on the resolution.
Okay. First then, Junkie, then Hoppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I want to weigh in on a few things. First of all, I would urge folks to vote for this, and I'll tell you why. First of all, I do agree with Representative Howes, and a long time ago when he was doing his questioning, I hope I'm known as one of the, we can all be partisan, but I try and be as nonpartisan as possible. I run a committee that got every vote on our committee bill that came out. Even Representative Diskins voted for it last year because we include everyone and we try and put together a committee bill. And by the way, that committee is the only committee in the House that's run without rules, too. I have no rules in my committee because I think we can all get along and should get along as members of this body.
And so as I look at this, I've been disturbed for a long time about the underlying issue that we're talking about today, and that's the separation of powers as defined by our Constitution. I have those same concerns when we talked about getting rid of one of our legislative bodies in the unicameral discussion, which I think went to constitutionality. And I always have concerns when it comes to our legislative rights under the Constitution as a body. And certainly that's what Representative Howes was alluding to earlier when he said, well, he's reading one thing in the paper, but this is certainly something different. You're right, Representative Howes. This is an action of the House, not an action of either party. It's actions of the House, and it is nonpartisan. You know, with all due respect to you, Representative Seifert, I fully expect there to be a Governor Rukavina a year from now. All right? And I do not want Governor Rukavina to have the power that we saw the executive branch exercise this past year.
Well, we agree on that.
Yeah, thank you. See, I'm bringing you all in nonpartisanly here now. So, so with that in mind, members, I have, again, looking at the statute is the real problem I have here, and it is a separation of powers issue. If you look at subdivision 4 on reductions or on allotments, and you look at paragraph C, it says that the executive branch, not the governor, but actually the executive branch referencing the commissioner of management and budget, if they determine that that we will have less than anticipated money in our budget to cover the costs of our state government, then they may run a line. And that's the key to this whole thing, is less than anticipated or non-anticipated shortages. Clearly what happened this last session, and by the way, we're going to start next session with $4.5 to $7 billion from the reports, the next budget session in the hole. So we could be reliving this with the Governor Seifert or Rukavina, there I'll give you one, Seifert, or anyone else. We could be reliving this as a legislative body. And it certainly was anticipated that we'd have the shortfall. That's what the whole basis of this discussion today is about the statutes and the Constitution. In the statutes, it was less than anticipated than you can unallot. By signing all the funding bills and vetoing the funding bill, you set up a scenario that was going to have a budget shortfall. And by that action, in my mind, as a member of this body, that is not consistent with the statutes. And that's what we're talking about. And it doesn't matter what party it is. It really matters following the law, the statute, and then the Constitution. And again, remember, Legislature 101, Government 101, we as a legislature, 201 members, two bodies, are elected to come down here and develop policy to direct how we're going to raise revenue and then to direct how that revenue will be spent. The executive revenue will be spent. The executive branch, headed by one elected member, is to carry out those dictates of the legislature. We are the people's voice. 201 people send us down to do that. They don't unilaterally hand that over to the executive branch. That's how our basic government works. And so this to me really is a separation of power. Representative Westrum and others, you're exactly right. Shame on us if we don't bipartisanly come back next year and change the statute on unallotment. And I would suggest there'll be many bills handed in to do it, and I'm looking forward to working with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, because we don't know who's going to be in the governor's office. And we don't know what party it's going to be. But we do know that we have a right as a legislative body to make sure that our wishes and the wishes of our people are carried out as per the Constitution. So members, I definitely support this. You know, we can argue till the cows come home in western Minnesota, you know, who should do the amicus brief, whether I should write it or the House Research should write it or an outside attorney should write it. But that's not the argument today. First and foremost, the argument is statutory and constitutional. And that's what we're looking at here, and that's what bothers me and has bothered me, frankly, since the end of session, knowing the actions that were going to be undertaken by the executive branch. So, you know, I get along with Pelini, too, actually in a bipartisan way, and he's always signed my bills and always encouraged. We've worked with him and his commissioners. They come to our conference committee and sit at the table with us. So, again, this is not a partisan issue. In my mind, this is truly a separation of powers and a statutory issue as per our statutes and our Constitution.
President Poppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, and with all due respect to Representative Junkie, the other question and the thing that does get partisan and political and that's keeping us here so long today and that's, I think, ensuring the presence of the media is a partisan political question, and that's whether or not in this matter, we should be using nonpartisan House research staff to do this work. And I think that's where it gets partisan and that's where it gets political. And Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask Mr. McCormick his opinion on whether or not, as the director of the nonpartisan House research staff, that this is something he's comfortable with his department or one of his employees doing.
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chair, members. In my memo, I specifically noted final paragraph or semi-final paragraph. The last two paragraphs, I think, state my opinion. House Research Department, and it is my goal to preserve this. The House Research Department strives to provide nonpartisan and confidential services to all 134 members. It is crucially important for HRD to preserve an ability to work with the minority as well as the majority caucuses. And in those awkward moments, the House Research Department will comply with a correctly constituted directive by the appropriate authority of the Speaker of the Rules Committee.
And Representative Poppe, let me read his last sentence for you. This is appropriate for reasons of legal standing. Representative Poppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. McCormick, are you sure you're not an attorney? You responded to the question without answering my question about your level of comfort with this. And I've read this several times and understand what's written. But I think that the questions that we should all consider before we vote on this today is why no body, whether nor no ruling party in the House for 35 years, Republican or Democrat, has done this. It's been 35 years, or 34 years, excuse me, since either body or either party has done this. And I think we should follow it up with another question. Representative Junkie said that this is a matter that should be considered by 201 elected members rather than one. Well, it's not. It's being considered by 134. Where's the Senate? The Senate is not working on this. I understand we're a House committee and we represent the House of Representatives, but I'm very uncomfortable with the fact that we're asking nonpartisan staff to get involved in this political partisan process. I'm also uncomfortable with the fact, and there might be very good reasons for it, but I think we should ask ourselves why this hasn't been done for 34 years by either ruling party. And I think finally, well, maybe I've said enough on that. I would urge members to vote no. I don't think this is something we want to do. And Representative Junkie, I do think there is some question, and we should always be zealous in regarding the legislature's position on the separation of powers, whether it's with the governor's office or the judiciary or wherever it would be. I just don't think that this is the right way to go about it. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Winkler to this point. And Representative Westrom, you are on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Poppe, I just want to be clear. The House of Representatives may not have filed an amicus brief,
since the mid-1970s, but it has twice sued the governor of Minnesota, which is a significantly bigger action to take. And in one of those cases, the House Research Department represented the House of Representatives in suing the governor of Minnesota. Same situation. It was the DFL legislature. It was a Republican governor. This is not something that has never happened before. In addition, the Minnesota Senate has, in several occasions, I think as recently as 2005, directed its research or its Senate counsel to file an amicus brief on a lawsuit that was pending that addressed squarely the issue of authority of the Minnesota legislature and how it's treated under the Constitution. So it's not like it's being portrayed that this is somehow an unheard of action. Actually, it's fairly routine, and the point is, I guess, that constitutional issues and constitutional encroachments by the executive don't usually happen in Minnesota because we tend to have a pretty strong tradition of adhering to the Constitution. We haven't had that problem. We have that problem now. And when we do, just because we haven't had that problem before doesn't mean that we should sit idly by and let six plaintiffs make the argument about the Constitution for us.
Let's send Murphy and then Westrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You know, I came to this meeting this morning feeling like we had sort of a rare opportunity to execute our duty and responsibility as legislators on behalf of the House and on behalf of the people that we represent. And I have to say I'm growing somewhat uncomfortable with the insinuation that we're going to be impugning the integrity of the nonpartisan House research staff if we move forward with this, because I don't believe that's true. Nothing further is from the truth. This is about separation of powers. It is about statute, it's about our Constitution, and our efforts, our duty to uphold that responsibility. I think this morning we're fighting for the voice of the people. I agree with Representative Duncan. And to try and shoehorn this into some sort of political or partisan discussion because we're uncomfortable with the direction that the state is headed is wrong. And I understand that it's our job to make arguments for and against a proposition. But I am very uncomfortable with the direction that some of my colleagues this morning are heading in terms of the reputation of the staff, and I wish we would lay off on that a little bit, and I wish we would focus our attention again on the Constitution, on our responsibility as legislators to express the voice of the people. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, as much as you want to will this to be something different, and I can't understand why it's partisan, that's the problem. You can't understand it. Because it's a Democrat issue and you see it with Democrat blinders, of course that's how you're going to see it. I don't think we should be putting our staff in this position. I think it's a wrong thing to do with the taxpayers' money, to use that as a shell game to file court cases. It's a political issue. Representative, to my point, Mr. Chair, Representative Hortman earlier talked about this battle that's gone on between the House and the governor all session. The fact is, there's a couple outcomes that could have happened. Representative Junkie talked about this, too. He wants to change the unallotment statute next year, and that's a legislative issue, a political question that should be brought up for discussion. This is potentially using the courts to change that. That unallotment statute should be changed in the legislative process, as Representative Junkie well noted. But it underscores the whole issue that this is a matter that could have been resolved several different ways. The House majority, the Speaker, could have gotten the bill through the committees and through the House of Representatives in time, so there would have been veto overrides before the governor, before the end of session. That would have been one option. That wasn't chosen. That was not chosen. Another option would have been to go to special session and spend lots of money that way. That wasn't chosen. Those are all legislative questions, political questions, Representative Duncan. Another option is to come back and change the statute. But to say, now we want to go change the statute through the courts, is not the proper way to change this statute, Representative Junkie. And that's the crux of the matter. And that's the issue we're trying to put we're taking our nonpartisan staff that has a great reputation at stake and putting them in the middle of this because you're in control.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westrom, I don't think it will be anybody's position in this litigation to ask the court to change the statute. The only issue that the Minnesota House of Representatives has is ensuring that the governor has to follow the law as written, just as everybody else does.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the beautiful things about the amicus process at the district court level is it's not very well defined at this point, which means a lot of people have a lot of freedom of movement and a lot of freedom of action. So any party who feels that it or they are interested could file an amicus brief. That includes the House Republican Caucus or the House Senate Caucus or the State Republican Party or the State DFL Party. Anyone pretty much can do it. And there's no guarantee if we file this amicus brief or when we file it that the court will even look at it. There's no guarantee that the court will have it figure into its deliberations. The court could be altogether silent on the matter. It could consider it or not consider it and not say a word in any written opinion about whether it did or didn't consider it. So it's very fluid and it's very flexible. So anybody around this table, individually or with a group of others like-minded, could file an amicus brief. And I would encourage those who have a different view today of what this committee will probably do to do that, either individually or on a group basis. That can be done. But again, I come back to the fact that this is only an amicus brief. We're not weighing in as a party. You want to talk about expenditure of taxpayer funds. If we were to weigh in as a party, unless we got someone to do this entirely pro bono, we would be talking potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars. But that isn't happening here. So there's no extra cost that's being incurred by people who are already working for the House of Representatives. I just see this as a reasonable, sensible, and limited way for us to make our voice heard. But there are other voices, as we've heard here today, and anyone who has a different opinion or a different viewpoint is free, individually or with others, to file their own amicus brief.
Representative Loeffler. And before Representative Loeffler, I don't see any other hands up. I just want to alert the members of the committee before the vote. There is a member of the public who wishes to testify, and we'll take that testimony after the members have asked all their questions. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It takes me back to the first day of session of every biennium. I've only been here 5 years, but we all individually pledged to uphold the Constitution of Minnesota and of our country. And this is the first time I feel like in 5 years I've been challenged to stand up and uphold the Constitution of Minnesota. And it takes me back to the elementary days when I was first taught the elegance and the strength of our form of government, which is three branches and a separation of power and checks and balances. And my elementary school teacher, and I suspect 90% of the elementary teachers in Minnesota, never mentioned partisanship in that discussion. Instead, they talked about how it worked. And checks and balances only work if checks are called when one branch oversteps its constitutional authority. And to me, that's the key issue before us, is we have a situation in which I, and I think others, believe one branch of government has overstepped its authority. And it's my obligation in upholding the Constitution as a legislator, as a member of one of those three branches, to call that check and to submit our opinions and our standing to the third branch, which is the judicial branch, which we have charged in our Constitution with mediating these issues. And to me, there's nothing partisan about this. This is our core responsibility, which is to uphold the Constitution of Minnesota that was created over 150 years ago and has been honored by people of all parties ever since. And so to me, there's no issue here about partisanship. It is all about our core responsibilities as state legislators and a member of the legislative branch. And so I'm somewhat mystified by some of the discussion, but I think this is really one of our core responsibilities to the body of the legislature. And no matter who was in the governor's office, I would be taking the same stance.
At this time, Mr. Carney contacted my office that he wished to testify, so if Mr. Carney would approach the witness table and give your name for the record and please provide your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob Carney, Minneapolis.
Okay, Mr. Carney, welcome to the committee. Please, with your testimony.
I am the lead plaintiff in a case that was filed earlier in July on an allotment that is challenging the attempted unallotment, the administration has used the word elimination of the political contribution refund. I wanted to testify briefly about that and also make a couple comments about both the current case and the separation of powers issue. I feel strongly about this. On the political contribution refund, we had a hearing before the same judge that's going to be holding the hearing today. I want to make the committee aware that I have a website, republicancontract.com. I've got a poster here on unallotment, which is my artistic rendering of the, and this is the actual statute, and I'm trying to put it in context. I see it as a little bit of a monster. In the lawsuit, it's addressing a narrow issue where I do have standing as an individual because I filed for a political contribution refund, and both this current lawsuit that you're talking about and that have in common the fact that there are individuals that have standing. The hearing on the 13th concluded with the motion on our side to amend the complaint because we did not raise constitutional issues initially. But I want to draw your attention to the fact I've got the entire legal record, all the filings of this case on my website, republicancontract.com, and I am interested in working with the people preparing a brief, if you do that, to make them aware of what has come forward in the legal record of the case that I have filed. And I'm very concerned about the sweep of the claims of the administration. They are much broader than I thought they would be, and that's one of the reasons that a motion to amend to introduce a constitutional issue was added at the end. So first, I just want to make you aware of the status of this case, that it has focused on the law specifically, and we think that there are strong reasons to conclude that the unallotment statute has not been followed properly, and I'm interested in working with the staff on that. With regard to the broader issue, I am a Republican, and I have gotten a fair amount of flack from people that say that I'm not a Republican, but the fact is I very strongly believe in the separation of powers. I want to draw your attention to the fact that the current standing Republican state platform calls for opposition to legislating by executive order. That's in the current Republican platform. And so I think that the position of saying that there are important separation of powers issues is a very consistent position with what has always been a Republican view of how government should work at the very most basic level, the Republican form of government. I want to introduce one other idea, which is going to be difficult for some people to accept. That is that there are strong arguments to say that there are political questions that the court should not address. And the case that I'm working on is relatively narrowly drawn, but there are these issues between the executive and the legislative, and I think that inevitably at some point you have to look at them as political issues. And so I think that one of the things, I think we've reached the point where a committee of the legislature should start to take a look at what our state constitution provisions are regarding impeachment. And I want to draw your attention to the fact that as far as the grounds for impeachment, an executive official may be impeached for corrupt conduct in office or for crimes and misdemeanors. And the point I want to emphasize there is that the phrase corrupt conduct in office is distinguished from anything criminal. It is, in a way, a method of removing someone from office for things that are not a violation of any criminal statute. I'm not calling for impeachment at this point, but I think that in terms of how the interplay between the powers of the legislature and the executive proceed going into the next session, that I think that we've reached the point where you have to start looking at the question if this is a fundamental subversion of the balance of powers, and if you don't want to drag the court into political issues, I think that's a legitimate concern, then you have to take a look at the question of impeachment.
Thank you for your testimony. Yeah. Any other members of the public wish to testify at this time? Is there any further comments or questions from the committee before we move on? Representative Carlson.
Chairman, I'm going to be voting for this resolution, and
you know, I want to say that I would be voting for the resolution, whether I was in the majority or the minority. As most of you know, I've spent 37 years here. I'll begin my 38th year this January. And I probably wouldn't have been here all these years if I didn't respect the role of the legislature and the importance of separation of powers. And that's the fundamental reason that I'm going to be voting for the resolution. The debate about the role of House research, I think, has been answered over and over again. But that's not the issue that's before us. The issue is just that, the separation of powers, and Article 3 that, Mr. Chairman, you read a few moments ago, in terms of what our role is, what the governor's role is, and what the judiciary role is. And as some of you know, I did spend many years in the classroom, teacher of government and economics. And Representative Loeffler, that's exactly the way I taught my government classes. I don't think we ever interjected that a discussion would be of a partisan nature. But when I was teaching my classes, we did talk about the role of the three branches. And I think that's the important question that's here before us today. So please vote yes.
Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Sirdic.
Aye.
Anderson.
No.
Carlson.
Aye.
Detmer.
No. Ooh.
No. Gunther.
No.
Hayden.
Aye.
Hoppy.
No.
Portman.
Aye.
Howes.
No.
Junkie.
Aye.
Lilly.
Aye.
Loeffler.
Aye.
Morrow.
Aye.
Murphy. Pulowski.
Yes.
Peterson.
Aye.
Seifert.
No.
Simon.
Aye.
Solberg.
Aye.
Westrom.
No.
Winkler.
Aye.
Zellers.
No.
There being 14 ayes and 8 nays, the resolution is adopted. Members, there's nothing else on our agenda today, so I hope you have a great week. We are adjourned.